from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, I was able to score this wonderful Monday night game. It wasn't easy, but I was able to do it. And let's start with, you know, before I even get to Sean Manaea, who I think is obvious. Now, obviously, Sean Manaea delivered another incredible performance. He's now pitched back-to-back dominant performances. I read a stat, and this was unbelievable, and I apologize for who put it out there for the first time because I don't know who to give credit to, but that Sean Manaea joins only Doc Gooden and Tom Seaver in terms of having back-to-back starts in which they pitch 7 scoreless innings and strike out 10 guys. I think that was the official stat. Let me read it. Okay, Sean Manaea joins Tom Seaver and Doc Gooden as the only pitchers in Mets history with 7-plus innings, 10-plus strikeouts, and no runs allowed in consecutive starts. There are 2 mind-boggling things about this. Number one, Sean Manaea has joined this kind of illustrious list. The other thing was the surprise that DeGrom didn't do it. Like, for everything that Jake accomplished in some of his dominant years with this team, it's amazing he didn't do that. But Doc Gooden, Tom Seaver, Sean Manaea, which is unbelievable. So we'll get to his great performance, but I think what was so important, especially in terms of the struggles that this Met team has faced since the All-Star break, was getting that big hit. You know, first inning against Andre Pallant, they do nothing. They go down 1-2-3 very meekly. They have a little bit of a rally in the second inning when Pete Alonso draws that 4-pitch walk. And yeah, we will get to the lineup change and some more about Pete Alonso. And they have this golden opportunity. McNeil almost bounces into a double play. They get a wild pitch. So they get kind of a gift runner in scoring position. And Francisco Alvarez, actually, the wild pitch is what gave him the run. And it felt very cheap and dirty. Like, hey, I'm glad we got a run, but can this team get a big hit? And Francisco Alvarez ends up grounding out weakly. So they do get a run, but they're still lacking that big hit. And sometimes one big hit can kind of open up the floodgates. And I certainly hope that Harrison Bader, who deserves a lot of credit because all year long he's been one of their most reliable clutch hitters. I thought the RBI double that he got in the 5th inning was huge. They have a 1-0 lead. Manaea looks great, but he's even had to get his way in and out of some trouble. They still needed that big hit. It never felt, despite them ending up shutting St. Louis out, that they were going to be able to win this game 1-0 or 2-0. They needed big hits. And Harrison Bader, batting 9th in the order, 2-on, 1-out in the 5th inning. I thought that RBI double was huge. And then, to their credit, they were able to build it and make it an even bigger inning. I didn't like Tyrone Taylor batting 2nd. I didn't like that lineup decision by Carlos Mendoza. But the reality is, the biggest spot of the game, bases loaded, 1 out, found Tyrone Taylor. And Tyrone Taylor, behind in the count, which is the other impressive thing, is able to rip that bases-clearing double, which was the huge kind of sigh of relief if you were watching this game. That huge moment of, okay, we're going to win it. Turns a 1-0 game into a 4-0 game. You get the Jeff McNeil home run and inning later. But those 2 at-bats, the Bader RBI double, the Tyrone Taylor 3-run double, you hope this leads to maybe this team being a little bit more relaxed at the plate with runners in scoring position. It's been a real struggle, really, since the All-Star break. They've had their moments, like the Minnesota game where they scored 15 runs. But for the most part, we went through all the numbers on the last Rico. It's been a real kind of slog coming out of the break, really including everybody. So Bader's double, Tyrone Taylor clearing the bases with a 3-run double, absolutely huge, chasing Pallant out of the game, giving Sean Manaea the huge lead that he was never going to look back on. Why I didn't like the lineup. And it worked. Look, it worked. The Mets went out and they scored six runs, right? Six runs, nine hits. They got the two big hits with runners in scoring position. Obviously, the biggest spot found Tyrone Taylor. So no denying it worked. I didn't mind bouncing everyone down a slot. Like, I wouldn't have done it. I said it yesterday on the Rico. I would have kind of kept this lineup the same and just said, you know what? Guys are going to start hitting. And who knows? If you kept the lineup the same, did the Mets go out and score five or six runs today? Maybe, probably. I mean, Harrison Bader still gets a big hit. Maybe that bases loaded spot finds Brandon Nimmo instead of Tyrone Taylor. Brandon Nimmo did take an over in this game, so you never know. But I don't mind if you're going to change the lineup to do what he did, which is put someone in the two hole and then move everybody down a slot. Brandon Nimmo has not played well in the three hole, but I do wonder sometimes, like, was Brandon Nimmo really struggling because he was batting third earlier this season? You know, right now he's been slumping and he's been batting second. So it's not as if like batting second was the magic elixir during this real slump he's been in coming out of the All-Star break. So I didn't even mind that. What I minded was Taylor being the guy. And I know that sounds weird considering he just got the three-run double, but I'm being honest with you. I mean, it's Tyrone Taylor. The guy's hitting 235 this season. If you're going to do what Mendy did, and you're going to sit Mark Vientos, which he did, maybe thinking, let me give him kind of like a mental break day after that big double play the other night. The guy to bat second was Jose Iglesias. And the other guy, by the way, I was thinking about, and this sounds crazy too, is actually Francisco Alvarez, thinking maybe batting Alvarez second and giving him the protection of Lindor ahead of him and Nimmo behind him can actually get him going. You know, Bobby Valentine used to do that a lot back in the day where a guy is slumping and you actually use the two hole to try to get a guy going. So when I saw the lineup and I saw the changes Mendy made, first of all, I commend him for trying. Again, I wouldn't have done it, but Carlos Mendoza has shown us that he's not afraid to shake the lineup up. You know, even a couple of days of struggling is enough for him to say, hey, let me try something different. That's not something we're really used to. So I do commend him for that. But when I saw the lineup, that was my first thought, which is, I'm good with pushing everybody down a slot, Nimmo 3, JD 4, Pete Alonso 5, but Tyrone Taylor as the two hitter didn't really fit. If Jesse Winker was in the lineup, which he chose not to do because of the reverse splits of Pallant, he could have batted second. So I'm being honest, like, it worked and I'm thrilled it worked because, like I've always said, I'd rather be wrong and happy than right and miserable. But I absolutely disagreed with Tyrone Taylor batting second around that logic. And I wouldn't continue it. Like, I know this worked. And if you want to keep kind of this Lindor one, which clearly he needs to stay at, but Nimmo 3, JD 4, Pete 5, cool. I think you've got to look at Mark Vientos batting second, which is an interesting little wrinkle if you want to try that with him back in the lineup. Jose Iglesias batting second. Even Jeff McNeil batting second. Like, I think they've got some intriguing options to bat number two if they want to continue this. And I kind of have a feeling he will. Like, it worked. They scored six runs. JD Martinez didn't exactly wake up. He took another over, struck out a couple of times. Pete Alonso, like, did he really wake up? He did draw the four-pitch walk. He had that bloop single that he tried to stretch into a double. So it's funny. Those guys, Nimmo, JD, and Pete, they didn't hit. You know, so it's not as if it got them going. But if you do want to continue that, I think I'm trying to think how I'd power rank it. I'd probably say, because I don't think Iglesias necessarily is going to be in the lineup every day. And look, he had another hit today, but he has cooled off a little bit. And with the emergence of Jesse Winker after the trade, like, we've seen a lot more of Winker in right field, McNeil at second. I think we'd all agree that McNeil deserves these opportunities. Looking ahead, they are sending, they're pitching a lefty tomorrow. The Colorado Rockies. So you got a lefty in Kyle Freeland, which does open up the opportunity for Jose Iglesias or Tyrone Taylor, though I hope it's not Tyrone Taylor, despite the three-run double. They are facing a righty on Wednesday and then another lefty on Thursday. So they're actually facing two lefties in Kyle Freeland and Austin Gomber in this Colorado series. So yeah, I think based on that, I would power rank it if Iglesias plays Iglesias. If Iglesias doesn't play, I'd consider Mark Vientos in the two hole. That would be where I'd go if he wants to kind of keep this trend going. But again, it didn't exactly get Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso, and JT Martinez hot. Now to Manaea. He was great, man. I mean, he was unbelievable. What was so impressive is that early in this game, he had some moments of big pitches he needed to make. He gives up that double to Nolan Arenado, needs to get Burleson out, needs to get Donovan out in the second inning. He does. He gives up a leadoff hit in the third inning, gives up a two-out single to Tommy Pham, who I thought was going to kill him in this game. Luckily, he didn't. Gets the big strikeout of Wilson Contreras, puts two guys on in the fourth inning, gets the big strikeout of the catcher, Rod Podges, I think is his name. So Manaea did a great job of not just, like, you look at the line and you see domination, and he certainly got a lot of swing and misses, and he didn't walk anybody, which is great. But he had to make big pitches early in this game before the Mets broke it open. They didn't break it open until the fifth inning. And the first four innings of this game, he was able to make big pitches against St. Louis, and really all night long. You know, even after Lindor made that error in the seventh inning, which was a bad one, but it happens. Manaea very calmly gets that last out, gives him seven innings. He's pitching great. He really is. These last two starts have been ultra dominant, and, you know, it kind of varies throughout the season on which starting pitcher you have the most confidence in. I think earlier this season it was Luis Severino. There was a period of time in which you started to believe in Jose Quintana. Right now, the ace of the New York Mets, if you had to pick an ace, is Sean Manaea. His next start will be Saturday in Seattle, so that'll certainly be a test against a quality team. But great performance by Manaea. Good to see Edwin Diaz at least get into a game. It seems like we never see him pitch. Ryan Stanek did pretty well. Did walk a guy, got the double play in his one inning of work. I'm glad they didn't, you know, just waste Jose Buto in this game. But a really good, clean victory by this team. Not a lot of stress other than the first few innings when the Cardinals had opportunities. Very important win. They get the tiebreaker on St. Louis. They open up a three-game loss column lead on St. Louis, but it's really bigger because of the tiebreaker. And by the way, I did confirm something I surmised on last night's Rico, which is if you split a season series against the team, the next tiebreaker is your record inside your division, which doesn't make a lot of sense if you're tied with a team that's not in your division. Just for the record, Mets have a quality division record. They're 20-16. So could be helpful down the road as far as future tiebreakers are concerned.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.